Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Will Edwards, Event Marketing Manager for Three Square. Until the end of May, Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is doubling its impact. For every dollar donated, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to children and families in need. Will, thank you so much for being here today.
Heather, thank you so much for having me.
So, first of all, what exactly is Three Square?
So Three Square is Southern Nevada's only food bank and largest hunger relief organization, and we service 4 counties in Southern Nevada, Lincoln, Nye, Esmeralda, and Clark counties.
When was Three Square first started?
Well, Three Square was first started in 2007, and since that time, we've provided over 644 million pounds of food to hundreds of thousands of Southern Nevada.
Wow, that's a lot of food.
It is.
So how do people in need get access to that food?
Well, the way our food bank works is that we source all the food, and then we have more than 150 partners out in the community who we get that food to, and then they distribute it to our hungry neighbors.
Nice. Okay. Now, what exactly is the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign?
So the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is a fundraising event that raises money for our childhood nutrition programs. And it runs from April through May 31st.
Okay. And how exactly does it work? How can people contribute to this campaign?
They just have to go to 3square.org. They can learn a little more about 3square and they can donate. In normal times, $1 would equal 3 meals. But during this campaign, $1 equals 6 meals. Thanks to our sponsors who are matching Nevada Gold Mines operated by Barrick and Envy Energy Foundation.
Wow, that's awesome. How is it possible that you can buy so much food for just a dollar?
Well, we are part of the Feeding America network of food banks, so that gives us a little more stretch for that dollar.
So you pay for the food and then it gets distributed through your various pantry partners, but the clients don't pay anything for the food, right?
That is correct. So we do pay for some food. Food is also donated in many different ways. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes when it comes down to sourcing the food.
Okay. Now you mentioned that people can donate at 3square.org. How much do people typically donate to a campaign like Bag Childhood Hunger?
Well, it just depends. You know, it's one of those things where you might have somebody who is extremely passionate about children eating and being able to concentrate in school. So they might give a little more than others. And then you might have individuals who only donate to this program. So it just depends, I think.
And besides this specific campaign, what other opportunities do Las Vegas residents have to support the organization?
Well, there's tons of things that one can do. Of course, one can always volunteer, and you can go to our website, 3square.org, and find out about volunteer opportunities. You can donate cash. You can support other partners in the community as well. And then there's 3 other annual events that we do that people can get involved with as well.
Okay. So just to reiterate, during the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign, which runs through May 31st, for every dollar that someone donates, that can provide up to 6 meals for hungry Nevada residents.
Correct.
All right. Awesome. So one more time, where can people go if they want to, first of all, get more information about 3square and what you do in the community, or especially donate to the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign to take advantage of that donation match?
Well, we really encourage people to donate, and we hope that they will, because there's more than 115,000 children living in food insecure homes right now where their parents don't know where their next meal is going to come from. So if you are inclined to donate, just visit 3square.org and learn more, and we appreciate that.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is 3square.org. That's all spelled out, 3square.org. You can find out more about what 3square does in the community. If you want to be a volunteer with the organization, you can find out more about that as well. And specifically right now, the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is going on through May 31st. So for every dollar that you donate with the matching sponsors, that can provide up to 6 meals for hungry, food insecure Nevada residents. So 3square.org is the place to go between now and May 31st. And we've been speaking today with Will Edwards. He's the event marketing manager for 3square. And Will, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about 3square and the difference that you're making in the community for food insecure residents, including children. Of course, we have to take care of the hungry kids. And especially this Bag Childhood Hunger campaign is really amazing, the way that you're able to provide so much food for so little money. So people can get involved, donate some money, and each dollar being able to provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals is just fantastic. So I really appreciate you being here and letting us know more about it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Sometimes it seems the crises just keep coming for children. COVID, war, drought, and famine. They can seem downright relentless. But you know what? So can our response. When helping children unites us, we are a force to be reckoned with. Where there is help, there is hope. It's why UNICEF won't stop, ever. Learn more at unicefusa.org/wewontstop.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Marissa Hawkins, owner and operator of Nevada-based Massage Envy franchises. To celebrate its 20th anniversary serving the Las Vegas Valley, Massage Envy is partnering with the Greater Youth Sports Association and the Clark County School District to host a Spring into Fitness event for students at Doris Reed Elementary. Marissa, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather. I appreciate you.
So why did you decide to bring a health and wellness event to school kids?
Well, we are celebrating our 20-year anniversary here in the Vegas Valley, and I thought it was only fitting that we aligned ourselves with something with health and wellness. And since we had such a great time partnering with CCSD to deliver 4,000 books just a couple years ago, we thought we would do it again, but this time with something fun with athletics. So we are going to be giving out soccer balls. 350 soccer balls are going out to a Title I school, Doris Reed Elementary, and we've partnered with a nonprofit called the Greater Youth Sports Association, who's going to allow us to, you know, get this event going.
How did you choose that specific school for this initiative?
You know what? That is a great question. And let me tell you, originally we were going to go with a bigger nonprofit that had a bigger name. But when that didn't pan out, I actually ended up calling my girlfriend, Julie Kane, who is big in the nonprofit side. And she was the one who recommended the Greater Youth Association, because apparently she had done something with her team and had such a great time. And it was just such an easy way to just work with a smaller nonprofit than the bigger ones that it just made complete sense. And sure enough, she gave me the contact number to a gentleman named Devontae Woodson. And I ended up calling him, and it was just so easy to work with him. He says, Marissa, I've done this already with Julie, and it's going to be a fun event. And kids always loved it. And last time they did it with footballs. So this time around, we're going to do it with soccer balls, because my daughter played soccer, club soccer, for many years. So I thought it was very fitting. And like I said, we're trying to establish, you know, not just health and wellness, but we're going to add some other things to it, like mental health as well as social health. So this just really was in alignment with what we wanted to achieve.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you'll be giving out hundreds of soccer balls to the kids. And what else will be happening during Spring into Fitness?
So we also have bags that the balls will be put in, as well as water bottles. We also got US Bank, who's going to be donating coloring books, and I think some soccer paraphernalia. We also have Anthem, who's going to be donating more bags as well as water bottles. We also have CCSD, who's going to be there to support. Not only that, we have our veterans that have been riding this journey into health and wellness with us. We selected 10 plus year veterans, and we've got about 27 of them, but we're not pulling all 27 of them off the schedule, because, you know, we can't take all of our teams down. But We have about six of them that are going to show up, and we've got some dignitaries that are going to be giving them some certificates of recognition for their work within our community. And the irony of it all is that when I first started this business and I went to my very first recruitment day, I had a teacher tell me at the massage school that, Marissa, you'd be very lucky if you had a therapist that lasted longer than 2 to 3 years. So the fact of the matter is, we got 27 of them, which I'm very excited about. Not to mention, someone told me that, Marissa, you'd be very lucky if you had this business last longer than 3 years when you're starting your own business. And so, really, this is a pivotal moment for us to be actually celebrating our 20 years in business. And so we want to just thank our, community, and we also want to, do something great, which, we've always used our business as a platform to give back to the Vegas and Henderson community. This one just seems like so much fun. Plus, a lot of people are getting involved.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like they say, it takes a village. So who do you have volunteering to run and help out with the event?
So we have CSN. We've got some soccer players. We basically got five guys and five girls who are going to teach the kids tricks with the soccer ball. We also have a business called Mind Fuel Motion with Leticia Escamilla. She is going to teach the kids how to do deep breath work along with meditation. And then we're going to have on our third station, we're going to have some volunteers from US Bank, as well as some of my team members, like I said, that have been with the company for longer than 10 plus years. My longest running is 18, 17, 16. So we're going to have some of those volunteers out there, sweating with us, as well as the Greater Youth Sports Association, some of their team members, along with people from the Doris Reed Elementary School volunteering for that event.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really cool. And we got dignitaries and, like I said, members from CCSD coming out as well.
That's going to be so much fun for those kids.
Very much so. Yes, we're excited. You know what? I've done so many great work with the schools that just seeing those kids, smile and the teachers being acknowledged, for their work and really just helping them out just really puts a great, feeling in our community.
For sure. Now, you mentioned liking to give back to the community. What other types of initiatives have you done?
We've done the Healthcare Heroes Give. Our business was one of those that was shut down during the pandemic. So we were closed for about almost 3 months. But the minute we were able to reopen our doors, we created a campaign called the Healthcare Heroes Give. And in 1 month's time, we were able to, all 12 locations at the time, were able to ask our members and guests to see if they wanted to donate, any of their unused prepaids to our, Healthcare Heroes. And in 1 month's time, we raised over 1,200 services to donate to our local hospitals, all of our local hospitals here. I think there was like 13 or 14 of them. That amounted to almost $140,000 of services given to our nurses. And that was just a remarkable event. And then not to mention, right after that, we gave that in, I think, October 2020. And then shortly after, in February of 2021, I saw an episode on Good Morning America, which talked about the aftermath of the pandemic. It showed, our healthcare heroes taking their lives. The suicide rate was very high because they hadn't seen, this type of death rate, in the time that they've been, servicing, our communities. So because of that, we knew that our business could no longer give any more gift cards. So what we did was we partnered with like-minded businesses, and we partnered up with Lake Las Vegas Hilton, who gave 3 days, 2 nights stay. We also partnered with Mama Bird Southern Kitchen. They gave a $100 gift card. We partnered with Orange Theory. They gave, I think, 3 months of service, as well as Reflection Bay Season 12 Hell's Kitchen winner, Scott Cummings. He gave a $100 gift card to have brunch with him. So that actually amounted to about $1,400 worth of giveaways to give to 14 nurses at each of the hospitals. So we had a nominate your favorite healthcare hero continuation, and all of the hospitals were able to participate, and people outside of our community were able to vote for their favorite healthcare hero. And so we were able to again be able to do another event at Reflection Bay near Lake Las Vegas Hilton to honor these, the winners. So it was awesome. They got to bring their significant other and be celebrated.
That's fantastic. Now, we often have nonprofits on the show talking about what they do in the community. Why is it important for businesses to also give back and make a difference?
You know, we have to do our part in society to give back, you know, and every little bit helps. I think that, you know, when you are being supported by your community, you have to give back to the community that serves you and serves the people within your doors. And I think we've been pretty blessed to be able to make it to 20 years. And we realize that we never are on this journey alone. And so we are thankful for the team members within our organization that have helped have us be able to have great members that peruse our business and come in, refer business to us. And so I think connecting to our community is very important because there's a lot of need within our community and every little bit helps, like I said. And so I think it's important for us to, you know, get out there and show, you know, our kids and our youth representation matters. And, you know, I feel that the more of us out there, you know, showing, you know, solidarity, the better off we are as a society.
Yeah, that's really inspiring to hear that. So how do people find out more about Massage Envy and what you do in the community?
Well, there's 13 locations here in the Valley. We have been servicing the community for 20 years now. We have a location in every part of town. And you can also go onto the website at massageenvy.com. There is an app that you can download and you can put your social, you know, not social, your zip code in. Did I say social? Oh my gosh, it must be tax time. And if anybody needs relief from tax season and it's over for you and you already know what's going out or what's coming in, then by all means, definitely come in and use some tax money to get yourself some self-care. You know, in a world where we are feeling the effects of mental health and just physical exhaustion, I think that a massage is a great way to decompress from the day and to, you know, take a little bit of your worries away.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. All right. So once again, the website is massageenvy.com, massageenvy.com. There's 13 locations in the Las Vegas Valley, and they've been here for 20 years serving our community. And as you've heard, Massage Envy loves to give back to the community, make a difference, especially in the lives of kids and youth, and helping out with health and wellness and fitness, including the upcoming Spring Into Fitness event that they're holding for Doris Reed Elementary. And we've been speaking today with Marissa Hawkins, owner and operator of the Nevada-based Massage Envy franchises. And Marissa, it's really inspiring to talk to you and hear about all the things you're doing, your passion for the community and for making a difference. It's really inspirational to me and hopefully to the listeners as well. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you again for having me, Heather. I appreciate it.
Time out.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the NIAA and the Nevada Athletic Directors Association.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Rod Griffin, Senior Director of Consumer Education and Advocacy for Experian. A recent survey from Experian explored customers' relationship with unmanageable debt. Rod, thank you so much for being here today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what exactly is unmanageable debt?
You know, people tell us they see that in some ways a bit differently, depending on their situation. For many, about half, they tell us that it's debt that is potentially preventing them from paying for their basic needs, things like groceries or housing, those sorts of things. Others tell us it's debt that, even though they're making their payments on time, the debt continues to grow and it begins to spiral and puts them in a position where they then are unable to manage their bills and those debts. So can mean a little bit different things to different people. In either case, it's debt that you can't or don't feel in control of.
Got it. Okay. What are some tips for managing and paying down that type of debt?
Yeah, so there are several approaches. We usually talk about credit card debt. That's the biggest one for most people. And we talk about things in terms of winter. Things like the snowball method for paying down debt. So if you take your credit card with the smallest balance, start to pay it off, make progress there. Once it's paid off, take that balance and put it toward the next largest one. It grows kind of like a snowball rolling downhill. The other method is what we call the avalanche method, which is focusing on your largest credit card bill with the highest interest rate, paying it off first, and then using that bigger payment to put toward your other credit card debts and pay them down. What I always tell people is you have to do what works best for you. The avalanche method, the math says, will always be the most cost effective. It will save you the most money in the long term, but it's also the one that takes the longest and can be discouraging if you're not seeing progress. And so you might be tempted to give up, and that defeats the purpose. So find what works for you. So that's one way. Another possibility is to find a side hustle, you know, do some work on the side, help you make a little extra money to help pay down those debts. And there are lots of resources and lots of opportunities today to do those sorts of things. 20 years ago, when I bought my house, I worked on weekends doing data entry because I could type, and so made a little extra money to put on that down payment. So, you know, those are sort of key. You know, you need to have a plan, have a budget. People hate that word. Call it a spending plan if you want, but you need to have a plan for where you're spending, understand where your money's coming from and where it's going to. And then the last thing I would say is use tools that are available to you to help address other costs you might not think of. So things like subscriptions that you're not using for streaming services, for example, for could be magazines, it could be any number of things, apps that you're not using. Experian actually has a subscription service, and we can help you find and cancel those subscriptions that you're not using and save you some money. Subscription creep today is a real thing.
Yeah, for sure. So where can people go to learn more about managing seemingly unmanageable debt?
Really simple. Go to www.experian.com. You'll find all sorts of tools and resources there. There are lots of free education materials that you can read and use. We also have a marketplace that can help you find lower cost insurance that can help you cancel those subscriptions you don't want and don't need, and perhaps even find lower cost, lower interest rate credit cards that you can apply for, not worry about hurting your credit score. And so maybe be able to transfer a balance and begin to pay it down as well. So visit Experian.com and you'll find lots of resources there.
All right. Awesome. So once again, that's Experian.com. Experian, of course, one of the major credit bureaus in the U.S. Plenty of resources there, tools to help you manage debt. Even when it seems unmanageable, there's always a way out. So check out Experian.com. And we've been speaking today with Rod Griffin, Senior Director of Consumer Education and Advocacy for Experian. And Rod, I really appreciate you being here, sharing these tips for consumers. You know, it can feel unmanageable. It can feel daunting when you've got a lot of debt, but of course, your tips are great for helping people get out of that debt slowly but surely. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Many business owners, entrepreneurs, and independent contractors can't stop themselves from spending all the money as it comes in, then incurring debt to pay taxes and other obligations. Help is available now. Debtors Anonymous is a 12-step recovery program to help people and businesses stop incurring new unsecured debt. Request free program literature at helpfordebtors.org. That's helpfordebtors.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Wendy A. Horwitz, author of Milkweed and Honey Cake, a memoir in ritual moments. Wendy, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm glad to be talking with you, Heather.
So what inspired you to write your new book, Milkweed and Honey Cake?
Well, I have to confess, it actually started as a travel book, believe it or not. Oh. I had several travel essays published, and I was working on other ones, and I thought, oh, I'll catch the wave of women's solo travel and I'll have this wonderful audience all set up. But as I started to rework those pieces and work on some new ones, I realized there was another kind of journey taking place, both in those travel pieces and in a lot of other work that I had done, perhaps in my whole career, and also essays that I was in the midst of working on, as I always am. And that was a journey through exploring what we mean by ritual. So I'm a storyteller, I'm a memoirist, I'm an essayist, and I decided to conduct that exploration through my own stories, mostly from the second half of my life so far, my life with children, but also some earlier times. So it was a little bit serendipitous, but once I stumbled upon this idea, I realized that this idea of ritual in all its forms has been a occupation and a preoccupation of mine during much of my adult life.
So what is a ritual moment?
Rituals, as I define them in the book, are everything ranging from what we ordinarily recognize as rituals, the weddings, the funerals, the graduations, the holidays, and also ones that we may not appreciate our ritual at the time or times that we need to create them. So for example, let's say you have a loss of a particular kind, a loss of a friendship or a romantic relationship. There isn't really a good ritual to mark that. There are psychological and social supports and their ways of dealing with that. But from my point of view, and I think many others, a ritual helps us frame the difficult moments and celebrate the best. Also, there are the smaller transitions in life. Watching one's children grow up or children who you care about go through changes, there are many turning points. And I, at least, felt the need to mark those at times. So, for example, the second chapter of the book is called Yellow School Bus Moments. And I open the chapter with a description of watching my little six-year-old at the time kind of totter up the stairs of the school bus the first time and my watching him leave. Now, that's a moment that parents and caregivers experience and we feel a tug at the heart, but it also felt very profound to me. It felt that it was the beginning of launching not only his independence, but of a new kind of identity for each of us. And I felt the need to mark it. Now, I have to say, sometimes my imagination fails me. And in that particular moment, I didn't have a ritual, but I certainly yearned for one. So I would say it's the ordinary things, the setting the table for a holiday, and the extraordinary things, looking out at a broken world, or events in the world that disturb us, or losses and big transitions in life. All of these add up to the ritual moments.
Okay, so I understand the subtitle, A Memoir in Ritual Moments, but why is the book called Milkweed and Honey Cake?
So honey cake actually appears in the book, literally, but it also represents something else. Honey cake is a sweet, moist cake that many Jewish families in the United States anyway serve at the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. I am Jewish, so that's something that my family did. So the honey cake represents that gathering together, the sweet moments, the legacy, the continuity. I actually have an essay called Sacred Pages, which is about my very messy recipe collection. And honey cake is in that recipe collection. And talk about the reinterpretation of old recipes where they didn't tell you quarter teaspoon of this. They said about a handful of something. And so by recreating that, I came to see that as also a ritual that brought to mind my foremothers in particular, the women who passed on these recipes, but also marked my sense of identity, a sense of the passage of time. So the honey cake is actual, the sweet gathering together at holidays and family occasions, but also symbolic. The milkweed, as some of your listeners may know, milkweed is a plant that grows indigenous to North America and elsewhere. And it is the flower that supports the full life cycle of the monarch butterfly. So there's the nectar and the caterpillars eat the leaves, and then it puts its little chrysalis on there and the little inchworms come out. So milkweed also figures in the book. I desperately tried to put together a butterfly garden during the pandemic. And it was a kind of outlet for me as we were all in isolation in 2020. But milkweed also represents the kind of moments in nature where we see something that inspires awe or a sense of something that's a bit more important than maybe our little troubles. And so nature is a theme that runs through the book, and milkweed represents both the stubbornness, the weed, and also the vulnerability that we all have and the beauty and awe that surrounds us if we take the time to look. I'm sure readers and listeners can find other connections to the title, but there's a lot of connotations in there, and those are a few of them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What kind of rituals can we all practice at home? You know, people might be listening thinking, wow, what a great concept, but I don't have any rituals.
So I would first say this book is not a how-to or a self-help. I would not presume to say this is what you do and then you create a ritual life. But if I were to suggest something, it would be first to look back and say, well, what were some of the things maybe that my parents or grandparents or other important adults in my life did that maybe I can serve with a twist? Maybe I can adapt for my own purposes. And I'm all about recreating and reconstructing tradition for our own purposes. And so even, I mentioned the recipes, even baking and cooking, I would say, take an old recipe. Maybe a great aunt gave you a recipe, or maybe you watched her make a particular kind of cookie for a holiday. Take that and really spend time with it. That can become a ritual. How do you recreate that? You serve it at a particular kind of year. The other thing I would say is to notice the times when it just feels like there's something missing. So I mentioned loss, but also celebration. I say in the book that celebration with just cake and champagne can feel a little bit empty. Is there something you can say? Is there a candle you can light? And that's just my experience. I'm not saying that's what you ought to do. Is there a quote that you can say? For some people, it might be a prayer. And you adapt that for the new time. So I would say start with where you are. The other thing I'm all about is sensory detail. So there is a lot of aromas and sights and sounds and tastes and textures in the book. And I would say, look around your home. Is there an object? Maybe it's a teacup that you have from a relative. Maybe it's a corner of the room. Maybe it's the aroma of a china cabinet. All of those cabinets have an old smell. And think, okay, what can I do with this? How can I use this to make a meaningful moment, maybe weekly, maybe monthly, maybe yearly? So I would say it's noticing, it's taking from your own old tradition, even if you don't use that now. And sometimes, and I'm very wary of this, but delicately, borrowing from others. I say in the introduction to my book that these are my rituals, my traditions, but if someone wants to borrow them and make them their own, go ahead. I think there are boundaries. I would never presume to intrude upon a religious ritual that's not my own. But I am inviting people to say, hey, how can I make that my own? How can I use that?
Yeah, wow, fantastic inspiration there. Now, it's obvious from listening to you that you're a storyteller, and the book obviously reflects that as well. So for anyone who's intrigued and would like to find out more or even get your new book, Milkweed and Honey Cake, a memoir in ritual moments, where would they go for that?
I would suggest to start with my website, and it's WendyHorwitzAuthor.com. Note the spelling of my name. People want to add an extra O in there. It's HORWITZ. So it's WendyHorwitzAuthor.com. And that tells your listeners a bit about me, about my background. It has a way to get in touch with me. And on the homepage, you just click get the book, and it gives you five or six ways to do that. It also lists other wonderful recordings like this one will be, and other news and reviews that they can take a look. So that's a good starting point, I would say.
Yeah, fantastic. All right. So once again, Wendy's website is wendyhorwitzauthor.com. H-O-R-W-I-T-Z is how you spell the last name, wendyhorwitzauthor.com. You can find out plenty of information about her past work, as well as Milkweed and Honey Cake, a memoir in Ritual Moments, the new book that we've been talking about today. Just click on Get the Book and you'll see places to do that, as well as if you want to listen and learn more about Wendy, wendyhorwitzauthor.com. And of course, we've been speaking with Wendy A. Horwitz, author of Milkweed and Honey Cake, a memoir in Ritual Moments. And Wendy, it's been really inspiring listening to you talking about these small rituals that make such a big difference sometimes in our lives. So I really appreciate you being here sharing today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Did you know that those with mental health challenges can be right in front of our eyes? But still go unseen? Behind some smiles, there's hidden pain, because our struggles aren't always on the surface. And they can affect anyone, anywhere, at any time. Our Black youth are at a higher risk for depression, anxiety, and other mental health struggles. Only 1 in 4 seeks treatment, and the stigma lingers. It's okay not to feel okay. There's strength in connecting and seeking help. Break the barriers. Break the silence. Sharing is healing. Share. Connect. Get informed. Your mental health is in your hands. Visit melaninthriving.com/mental health in your hands.
This message brought to you by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Welcome to Odyssey's One Thing Earth Day special. When we each do one thing to help the environment, it becomes 100 things, 1,000 things, 1,000,000 things for our planet. That's the power of one thing. Today, we go to South Florida, where Odyssey hosts Evie Unleashed from Power 96 and Ashley O from 104.3 The Shark lead our conversation for Earth Day, coming up on April 22nd. They're joined by Kat Uden from Oceana to talk about protecting our planet's oceans. From beach cleanups to limiting plastic use to becoming civically engaged with local lawmakers, Kat shares what you can do to keep our oceans clean and safe. Now here's Evie and Ashley.
Hello, hello. I am Evie Unleashed, and we've got a tag team show. I've got my girl Ashley O.
Hello, hello.
There's a special reason we're connected besides the fact that we're down the hall from each other. And it's all about the ocean and preserving it. And we have a special guest, Kat Uden. She is a senior field representative here in South Florida of Oceana. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So FYI, just in case we didn't know, you know it's Earth Month, right? Right. So this past Friday, I actually did a beach cleanup with my son and his school. His entire fifth grade class did some volunteering. It was actually my first time doing it. You know, being here in South Florida for so many years, I was like, it's my first time. Now, I've worked with organizations. I've talked about it. We've interviewed. But actually getting in the thick of it, in the sand and in the sun. And we went to a local beach, Dania Beach. And when I walked onto the beach, I was like, well, this is beautiful. I mean, this is going to be pretty fast because there's not much here. Yeah, right. We walked away with 120 pounds
Wow.
of trash on a beautiful, like, initially to the eyes, it looks nice and clean. But when you start digging in, there was so much. So, number one, kudos to all the kids that did a lot of hard
yes.
work.
Yes.
But that's exactly why we're having this conversation, because we don't realize how big this problem is. So, kick it off, Kat. Give us some information on how you started and where you're at now and why you're so passionate about what you do.
Well, thank you again for having me. My name is Kat Uden. I'm Senior Field Representative for Oceana, and we are the world's largest international nonprofit organization that works solely on ocean conservation, and we do it through science-based policy. So I am in the advocacy arm of Oceana. We have a whole team. You know, we have a DC office, and although we're in many different countries, I work on the North American campaigns. I work on offshore drilling, fisheries protections, plastic pollution, and plastic pollution is something that I'm really passionate about. I actually started out as a Broward County public school teacher.
Oh, really?
For 15 years.
No way.
And I started volunteering at a lot of beach cleanups.
There we go.
And eventually became a volunteer chair of the Surfrider Broward chapter and started hosting my own cleanups, inviting lawmakers. And it was such a huge problem. I'm also a stand-up paddler, and I see the plastic and the debris that's in our waterways. And every time I paddle, I'm picking up trash out of the ocean, trash on the beach. And it became such a worrying problem that I wanted to do something on a higher level. So I left teaching, and now I work for Oceana. And one of the things that I work on the most is our plastic pollution campaign. So we make sure that our oceans are protected, that our marine life and endangered species like the North Atlantic right whale have protections. And it's just something that I'm very passionate about, and we all should care about, whether we're by the ocean or not.
Yes. We go and enjoy our beaches, and we love South Florida, but it's like, how much do we love it? Are we really paying attention to what we're doing? And I know you have a lot of experience, Ashley, working with organizations and being out there too.
It's crazy what you see once you get into it and actually start working on the problem. And that's what I find crazy about your story, is you started doing these ocean cleanups and then felt called to do something higher. But what else have you learned along the way, impact-wise, that our ocean has on, well, us everywhere? Because once you start doing the work, you realize it's not just about picking up a bottle cap or saving a turtle. Mm-hmm. There's a much bigger picture here. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it goes much deeper. And if we can't just rely on cleanups. They're so important, and they're a great gateway to advocacy, and they help people see what the problem is, but we're never going to solve the problem with cleanups. We mm-hmm. need to solve it. A lot of people make the analogy, if your bathtub is overflowing, do you go grab a mop first, or do you turn off the tap?
Mm-hmm. That is probably the biggest statement that shocks me right now, because a lot of people do think, okay, yes, we're helping, and that's just like the surface, I'm assuming.
Yes.
But so what is it that the bigger problem is, and how we can help?
Yeah, so I work for Oceana, and obviously we work on protecting the oceans and the marine life, and I care about our dolphins and our whales, and honestly, we should all care about fish. If we're eating seafood, the seafood is eating the plastic, and then we're eating the fish, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a problem for human health as well. But what I want people to remember about plastic is, from the time it's made until the time it's disposed of, it's a problem, the whole life cycle of plastic. So it goes a lot deeper than the ocean problem. Even people who don't care about dolphins and whales and sea turtles can care about people and human health. And then to disposal as well. So you're in Miami. I'm sure you heard about the Doral incinerator fire.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what to do with our waste. Our landfills are at capacity. And everything that goes into the landfill or in the incinerator is creating greenhouse gases and contributing to climate change. So even if we were to find a way to recycle all of these plastics or throw the plastic, a lot of people say, well, I'm, you know, responsible with my plastic. I put it in the recycle bin, or I put it in the trash can.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter where it goes, it's causing a problem. We recycle a very tiny portion of the plastic that we use. And again, even if we found a way to do it 100% of the time or responsibly, it's just the act of creating that plastic that's a problem.
So we should be plastic free.
Yes. So like reusable bottles, reusable cups.
Oh, yeah,
reusable
wow.
utensils. I always have a reusable metal spork in my bag that I take place, so I never have to use a plastic fork. And a lot of different states across the country and entire nations are reducing their use of single-use plastics. And the United States is the number one plastic producer in the world. So we have a big responsibility and role to play in that.
In the world.
Yes.
Wow.
Would you consider microplastics kind of the most urgent threat we have to our oceans right now?
Microplastics are a huge threat in the oceans. But again, it's kind of the whole spectrum of plastic, from production to disposal. Microplastics, if people don't know, they're very tiny. You might have seen them on your beach cleanup. Very, very tiny pieces of plastic. And a lot of times that comes from them photodegrading in the sun, in the ocean. They get swirled around in the ocean. They photodegrade in the sun. They break down into tinier, tinier pieces. I've even seen microplastics that are like powder. They're so small. Mm. And, you know, our seafood is eating this, and then we're eating the seafood, and it's a huge issue. It's getting into everything. They found it in honey, in beer, in snow, you know, in the deepest, darkest places of the ocean. There is nowhere that seems to be safe from plastic. And it's also affecting our human health. Oceana just came out with a foam report, polystyrene foam, food containers and drink containers. If somebody wants to go on and read it, it's on our website. And just how these containers are affecting human bodies. These plastics get into our food, into our drinks, especially when you heat them. And like, I won't eat out of polystyrene foam, and I won't let my children drink or eat anything out of polystyrene foam. So just because I'm so educated about it now and I know so much about it. So, you know, it's not just the dolphins and the whales. It's also human health, and it's affecting our water supply and everything that we eat.
The key thing that you said is that because I'm educated and I know about it, and I think a lot of us feel, oh, we're educated, let's pick up the plastic, let's use the plastic and then throw it away properly, let's recycle the plastic, and that's where our knowledge ends. But as you go further, as you said, dig deeper, no pun intended, but you know, it's a lot more complex than that. And even though you're using it responsibly, the fact that we're using it is killing us, killing our wild, our animals, or the fish. It's really, really saddening. Yes. I had no idea.
And I don't fault people for not knowing, you know, beyond that. Well,
correct.
Recycle it or throw it away, it's not a problem. Because most of us are taught that way, you know, mm-hmm. three R's, you mm-hmm. know, reduce, reuse, recycle. I actually don't include recycle in my R's. I do. My R's are reduce, reuse, refuse, and refill. So I leave out recycle altogether because I know the life cycle of plastic, and it's a problem to use it in the first place. But this is why it's important for people like me, because I'm in the advocacy arm of Oceana, to go and educate our lawmakers about it. So I always say, I'm not done teaching. I didn't quite leave teaching. I'm just
You're still
not
teaching,
teaching
yeah.
kids. I'm teaching lawmakers
and adults
about what they can do. So, yes.
That's interesting.
You're actually no stranger to like the inner workings of the legal system and getting policies in place in order to protect our environment. Like, what are some of the behind the scenes things and issues you have to put at the forefront in order to create real policy change specifically for the oceans?
Yeah, so like I said, I came from a school teacher background, so I did not have that, you know, formal advocacy or political training.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really has to. So when I was volunteering for Surfrider Foundation as a teacher, we would go speak to our lawmakers. We would go to city meetings. There are always usually a portion of the city meetings that are citizen comments, and you go and speak. You can do for 2 or 3 minutes about anything that you want. So even if it's not something on the agenda, you can go speak to all of your lawmakers at the same time, educate them, let them know what you want them to do in your city. And then also, people need to call their lawmakers, and they need to make appointments with them. People often think that after you're done voting, that's it. I voted. I did my part as a citizen. But I really encourage people, no matter who wins, even if it was the person you voted for or not, you have to stay in touch with them, and you have to let them know what you care about, what they should care about, how they should vote. If you hear about a bill on the news or you read about an article about it, hey, that would be a really good law that would protect the oceans. Call your representative's office, tell them the bill number, tell them you want them to support that bill and why. And sometimes it's just a staff member that answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Some people that are really shy, tell them you can call after hours and just leave a voicemail about what bill you want them to vote on, because people say, I'm shy, I don't want to call my lawmaker. So there's many ways that you can get involved, but I encourage people, please stay in touch with your lawmakers. Pay attention to how they vote on bills. Policy change is proven to work. In these places where policies are in place, it's proven to work.
I feel like a lot of us do just vote and feel like that's the end. And a lot of people are not aware that your voice is louder and you're able to literally call. I mean, they all have social media as well. That's another avenue. So be able to speak to them and them actually get a message directly. Like you said, it might be a staff member, but they'll get the message, and it goes further than just voting and, oh, it is what it is. And there's more power in that than just saying, okay, I vote for you, I don't vote for you, and that's the end of it. Some people get discouraged to do something, maybe because they're shy or maybe because they don't know. And that's very, very important that, you know, you have a voice and you're able to push things further than you actually think.
And one of the most fun things that I've done in my job is I take volunteers who have never spoken to their lawmakers before, and I've taken them to Tallahassee in a group, and we let them know what the issues are, and they learn how to talk to their lawmakers. And that's some of the most rewarding work for me, because then they are empowered to do it again on their own.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel, and how would you respond to maybe someone that feels, oh, saving, being Green Earth Day and saving our ocean is just a political thing, and they feel that it just happens to be on what side you're on, whether or not you care or not.
Yeah, so Oceana is a 501c3 nonprofit, so we don't take any sides. We're not political. We don't favor one political party over the other. We work with all of our lawmakers, and I've seen the most change happen when we get together with different political parties and get together about what we care about and push for change that way. We saw it here. I live in Florida, so we saw it with our state parks. You know, there was an attack on the state parks where they were going to allow, you know, irresponsible development, and both sides of the aisle came together to fight that development, and it worked. So people need to come together. I know it's very polarized right now, and people feel like they need to take sides on a team. But I've found that there are a lot of environmental issues that we do come together on, and we have to work on that and work together, because that is where the change is going to happen. It's where you reach across the aisle and to people that you're not necessarily comfortable with on other issues and say, look, we agree on saving this river. We agree that we both like fishing and we need to make sure the fish are healthy. You know, and that's when the most change happens, is when you come together and you push them in a bipartisan way.
I love that. So I would ask you this. You mentioned that you are a South Floridian yourself, and here in South Florida, we see it. We enjoy our beaches. Why is it important, and why should other people care when they're not even near the ocean, and why does it matter?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because there are people like, well, I don't care about whales, or I don't go to the ocean.
Yeah,
I live
fish
in the center of the country. They've never been to the beach. You know, the ocean is, it affects everyone. It's 70% of our planet. It actually produces the most oxygen on the planet. A lot of people think about trees when they think about oxygen, but it's also the ocean. It absorbs carbon, so it helps regulate climate and affects our weather. It provides food for people, so it provides our seafood. It's good for tourism, for the economy, for recreation. I know for mental health, sometimes people go out and it just, the being at the beach and the ocean makes them feel better. So people all over the world should really care about the ocean, because it affects us in ways that a lot of people don't really understand.
And you know what's crazy is that so many people go to the ocean, if they're not from here, to go and visit, like you said, tourism. So you got to care about the ocean if you want to enjoy the ocean.
Yes.
Well, and when you come to enjoy it, I don't know if you necessarily know the impact it has or how much it goes into keeping it like pristine, because if we didn't do those beach cleanups and whatnot, you don't know exactly what would happen.
Odyssey invites you to find your one thing at odyssey.com/one thing.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
We see the urgent threat of climate change every day. Tornadoes in Texas, drought in Europe, typhoons in the Philippines. But what don't we see? How the climate crisis hits vulnerable people the hardest, women and girls. That's why CARE helps the world's most marginalized people build resiliency and fight for a more just and sustainable world. You can help. Learn more at care.org/climate.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, April 21st at 8 p.m. benefiting Once Upon a Room, and Monday, May 5th at 8 p.m. benefiting Nevada Public Radio. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. April is Earth Month, and the Arbor Day Foundation is partnering with Subaru for the Subaru Loves the Earth initiative to give away free trees through Arbor Day next Friday, April 25th. Reserve your tree or find out more at subaru.com/earth. That's subaru.com/earth. The 14th Annual Las Vegas Science and Technology Festival, provided by the Las Vegas Natural History Museum in collaboration with the Clark County School District, is happening from April 25th to May 3rd. The festival includes dozens of free STEM activities around town, finishing up with a giant science and technology expo at the World Market Center. All events are free, but advance registration is required. Register or find out more at scifest.vegas. That's scifest.vegas. The Collaboration Center Foundation's fifth annual Night en Blanc Gala is happening next Friday, April 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Collaboration Center's campus, 8390 West Windmill between Durango and Buffalo. Proceeds support the Collaboration Center's programming for families touched by disabilities. Get tickets or more information at collablv.org. That's collablv.org. April is World Wish Month, and Make-A-Wish Nevada is holding their 24th annual Walk for Wishes fundraising event next Saturday, April 26, with 7 a.m. registration and the walk and run starting at 8 a.m. at Town Square, Las Vegas. Sign up or find out more information at walkforwishesnv.com. That's walkforwishesnv.com. Special Olympics Nevada is hosting the Vegas Plunge and Duck Derby fundraiser next Saturday, April 26, starting at 9 a.m. at Cowabunga Bay Water Park, 900 Galleria Drive in Henderson. This is a Vegas-style plunge with a heated wave pool instead of the typical icy polar plunge. Find out more, sign up for the plunge, or adopt a duck for the Duck Derby at sonv.org. That stands for Special Olympics Nevada, SONV.org. And Aid for AIDS of Nevada, or AFAN, is hosting the 35th annual AIDS Walk Las Vegas on Sunday, April 27th, with registration at 8:30 a.m., resource fair at 9 a.m., and walk at 10 at Las Vegas Ballpark. Penn and Teller return as grand marshals for the 24th consecutive year. Register for the event or find out more at AFANLV.org. That stands for Aid for AIDS Nevada, Las Vegas, AFANLV.org.